Blog Talk Radio.
This is ATL Designer, the host of In the Mood, and you are listening to Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle, right here on Blog Talk Radio. You know, Terry brings you all the hot topics for your listening pleasure. Each and every Friday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com. And you can also reach Terry direct. Her number is 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. So log in, listen, enjoy. I'll see you there.
This is a song I've been singing for a long time. It's like an old friend. But you know, I think it's only recently that I discovered what it's really about. You've got to give a little, take a little, and let your poor heart break a little. That's the story of, that's the glory.
Tonight we have a special guest for you. Her name is Paz Ellis. I apologize for pronouncing the name wrong. Paz Ellis. And before we bring her on, I want to tell you a little bit about Paz. Paz is biracial and bicultural. She is half Dominican and half Cuban and full of life. And also she's a writer, and she wrote her book entitled Plantains and the Seven Plagues. And going through the world right now with the loss of lives and Black Lives Matter and all the unrest and the United States being on fire, you know, her book is an inspiration after the death of her mom, you know, and it shows the love and family growing up as an immigrant. So maybe she can have some input that will really kind of calm the situation down from a different perspective, because as long as she got the that dark complexion and looks like she's black or half black, you know, it's a shame that, you know, you got to be afraid, because some people are just stupid out there. You watch the news and people are just, they have lost their mind. You know, everyone is equal. Everyone is human. Everyone bleeds red blood, you know, so this is unnecessary. And this is a time that the United States needs to heal. And I thank all my fellow brothers and sisters globally who are in solidarity with this movement about I can't breathe, you know. And I want to thank all my listeners from north to south, east to west, who's tuning in, and all my listeners from 28 countries globally. Thank you for being part of my listening base, and tell your friends so we can continue to grow and bring you those stories that are not censored. You know, on the show called Unmasked, we're going to peel back the layers one layer at a time. But before I bring on Paz, I want to introduce my co-host, Chris. How you doing, darling?
I'm doing good, Terry. I'm doing very good. It's a bit stormy in Ohio, but I'm hanging on. How about you?
Well, so far the weather is nice and calm, but the last few days it was really nasty. So hopefully we'll get through this. And Paz, how you doing, sweetheart?
I'm great, thank you. It's nice to talk to you.
Yeah, exactly. And you know something, beautiful picture, by the way. Look at my Facebook page and you'll see what she looks like. You talk about love and growing up as an immigrant. And I know that in itself, you know, the stories that I've heard have been hard to grow up as an immigrant. But, you know, really, most everybody else who came to America, they're immigrants. So, you know, except for the Indians. But, you know, tell us about growing up and the love that you were surrounded by and your family.
Sure. Well, I was personally born and raised in New Jersey. My parents were immigrants, and so I was a child of immigrants. And my story really is my whole life has kind of been trying to decide between who I am, what I am, when I am. I mean, my father was white Cuban. My mother was half black, half white Dominican. And I grew up in the late 60s, early 70s, where things were not exactly still ready for a biracial relationship. So that was something that I dealt with when I was younger. And but my parents were very proud to live in this country. They had a little bit of problems assimilating. They didn't want to learn English. They eventually did, of course. They didn't want to lose their cultures, their individual cultures. But they instilled in us a love of our cultures, of who we are and where we come from. And that is something that I've tried to pass on to my own children, because I don't want them to lose sight of who they are, where they came from, whether it be, you know, one generation or six or ten generations ago. I want them to know all of their parts. And
I'm so glad you said that, because, you know, by you being biracial and bicultural, you know, everyone, I don't care how you were raised, everyone has something that the other races can appreciate, whether it's the types of food, the type of celebration, the type of clothing, you know, so the melting pot, you know, to me makes things wonderful, because it's like flowers in all different colors popping up everywhere. I appreciate the difference of people, because I know who I am, but I like to know who you are. And so, you know, keep teaching your children to own their identity. They may assimilate, like you said, but own their identity. And on that note, I'm going to let my co-host Chris ask his question.
Sure.
All right, Paz. Well, whenever we have writers on the show, the first question that I always like to ask is, what inspired you to be a writer?
Well, I've been writing since I was very, very young. I always liked to write. And I started books that I never finished, and I still have them. I just have never done anything with them. But 4 years ago, my mother passed away. And when she passed away, I was not ready for that. I had already lost my dad, and then losing my mom just put me over the top. I wasn't grieving properly, and I started to write her a letter. Well, I didn't start. I wrote her a horrible letter. I was so angry and so sad. And the next day, I said, I think I'm going to tell the story. And my memoir is it's small. Somebody said it's an itty-bitty bit of a memoir. It is. It's short. It's like 160-something pages. But it was a little chunk. It's me. From when I was a child, and it tells the story of when my parents met up until my mother passed away. So that my inspiration, my springboard to my author career was the death of my mother, which is horrible, but it was the springboard to something amazing, which is something that I always loved to do. And I don't know why something terrible had to happen for me to finally just, you know, take the leap. So that my mother, losing my mother inspired me to find myself and to keep writing. And I haven't stopped since. And that was 4 years ago.
That's
so
awesome. That's very awesome.
Yeah.
So,
I'm sorry. The book you wrote, Entire Plantains and the Seven Plagues, when you say seven plagues, what are you referring to?
Well, of course, the plantains has to do with the Dominican side, with being Dominican. And plantains are, you know, we eat them anyway. We can make them.
I know what they look like. Yes.
As for the plantains,
I've had some.
Oh, I love plantains, but they're not keto, so I don't eat them right now. But the plagues, the seven plagues, has to do with my father. He couldn't see his family for over 23 years because they stayed behind in Cuba. And when Castro took over, he was separated from them. And he hated Castro and what communism did to his country and what it did to, well, so many families. It was horrible. So he was always coming up with really creative ways to get rid of Castro. And he would, like, pray. I mean, it was sadistic, and it was just, at the same time, it was kind of a cathartic thing for him because my father became ill. And so he was always coming up with these really creative ways that God would eliminate Castro. And so he would say things like, oh, why doesn't he strike him with such and such a plague, or even plagues that aren't in the Bible, his own invented plagues. And so that's where I got the title from. And when I wrote the book, when I started writing, I immediately knew that I know that the title's a little different, but that signified my mother and my father and his struggle and his way of dealing with the loss of his family. So that is where the plagues comes from. And it was comical, but at the same time, it was sad.
Yeah,
very
sad. It's got to be hard for any man who loves his family. It has to be divided because of political reasons, you know, because back in the day, I would see on the news how boatloads of people would try to get there, and some didn't make it because of the weather, and some was turned back because of the United States not opening their borders to illegals. But I kind of think that, you know, once we embrace everybody, we make place a better place because you add new ideas, and I just don't think it makes any sense to try to think that you want to make a country only a certain ethnic group. That's not going to happen, and that's stupid to assume that you want to do that, because when you shut off different people's and their interests and their ideas because you're opinionated and stupid acting, you know, and y'all know who I'm talking about, but Lord knows I got to say one thing. First, I got to say hi to my good friend Tripp Ellis. Not Ellis, I'm looking at your name, Tripp. Thank you, baby.
Yeah,
for turning me on the pad.
I talked about a few days ago.
Get out and vote November. We got to get that clown out of office.
Exactly.
Okay, Chris, go and ask your question, baby.
All right. Well, Paz, my next question to you is, how have you been dealing with this COVID crisis that we've been living under since March? How have you been coping with that?
Well, I'm pretty much a homebody, and I have a couple of illnesses, the autoimmune illnesses, that at first I was like, I'm not leaving the house, and I didn't. But I don't feel, I personally, where I'm living, I know that Florida is one of the states that now they have more cases, but they're testing a lot more. So you're going to find more cases, not only cases, but people that have the immunity. So it's just, you know, I was home a lot, and but I make good time. I write and I read, and I, you know, I just do my work. I do a lot of marketing. I haven't been personally affected by it. I actually only know one person that was affected by COVID as far as being ill. I mean, because I know a lot of people that lost their jobs or, you know, have only recently begun to go back to work. But I have what I've been affected by that I think is really sad is all the businesses, small businesses that have not been able to come back from that.
Yeah.
So as far as, you know, the COVID, I just think it's sad that it's affecting our, you know, our small business owners, and people are afraid. And I think it's been a little blown out of proportion. The whole mask thing, wear a mask, don't wear a mask, you know, they keep flipping back and forth. I don't wear a mask. I can't wear a mask. And I just feel, you know, it's just like anything else. We just have to kind of brave through it and hope to God that it'll pass and that it'll go away and we'll all be okay.
But do you social distance? I can understand the mask thing, but do you social distance? Well, you say you stay home a lot, so I think you're
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if I, you know, where I'm at, the strange thing is you have to go to the grocery store. So, of course, I try to stay away from people, but you can't really, even if you're walking down an aisle, someone is walking right by you or walking across the parking lot, you know, but I do, and I don't really go anywhere. I wouldn't go to the theater. I won't go to the mall, which is a lot of places I wouldn't go. But I definitely, you know, try to be careful. And since I have to go to the cancer center to get some treatments for one of my illnesses, I definitely wear a mask then. And I try to stay away from people because there's a lot of people there that have their immunity is so poor. So you need to respect that.
I can respect where you're coming from. I mean, you know, if you can't wear a mask, you know, some people have health issues. I respect that. But I think, you know, you're still on the right path. I think. I mean, from what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so much you can do. The other thing to the mask, and it's not something that we're going to be seeing right away, is that people are inhaling their what they exhale, which is carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide. And that's not good. Mm-hmm. So people who are wearing it all the time are getting a lot of headaches. And, you know, down the line, that might be a problem for some people. I know it gives me headaches, but at first I wore it, and I couldn't do it. And my doctor said, don't wear it. You're okay. You know, your immunity's fine. So, there are some people that have to.
Yeah, some people wear it too much, you know. So I always say, you know, wear a mask or social distance. I mean, That's the choices.
Right.
Oh,
absolutely.
Well, as a lot of people, because of the upsurge of more cases of COVID-19, you know, even myself, you know, I didn't never ask you why you can't wear it, but some people say it's hard to breathe. But, you know, by people being afraid, you know, I look at people sometimes and I say to myself, are they not worried about their own health, not looking at it from the perspective that it gets to be uncomfortable to them? You know, it's just that, you know, fear makes you think stuff, you know, and now with people sometimes coughing and sneezing because of allergies like pollen, making everybody else on pins and needles because they don't know whether that's COVID-19 or if that's an allergy, you know. So how do you deal with people who might look at you all crazy because you don't have a mask and you see them obviously stepping away like, oh, my God, you know, like you got the plague or something?
Yeah. I like I said, I don't go out very much, but I think it's more of a fear. I feel like people have been are so afraid, and I think it's really sad that they're afraid. I'm not afraid. I've had too many things happen in my life to be worried about COVID-19. Every year I have to worry about the flu. I have to worry about my immune system for the, you know, my different illnesses. So this isn't any different to me. I just try to avoid certain places, and I wouldn't go, for instance, to visit an elderly family member or someone that I know is sick, because I don't know if they're going to, like when I go to the cancer center to get my treatment, they always ask me, have you been around anyone that has COVID-19? Have you, do you know of anyone that came from such and such a state? But I have no idea. You know, how do you know that? Because we don't know what people have. So it's kind of a tough call.
That's a very good point. And I want you, if you get a chance, Paz, to go ahead and get one of your books handy. Get your book handy because we're going to take a small break. And I want you to read part of your book because I want people to hear what you wrote so they can also support you financially and buy a copy.
Okay. What part do you want me to read?
Okay, well, I'm gonna give or take a little small break, and while we take that small break, you find something, you flip through something you want to read, and we'll be right back in two and two.
Okay, will do.
Controversial, real, unparalleled. Author is Terry E. Lyle, has written an autobiography entitled Broken. Terry talks about overcoming her personal battle with suicide, being homeless, selling and using drugs, and living the life of a swinger. She found that with prayer and her belief in God is real, that she was blessed to overcome all adversity to becoming the woman and authoress she is today. The book is $20 and can be purchased through Amazon, Kindle, createspace.com, and from her own personal website at www.terrylyle.com. It's yours. And make sure you tune in to hear Terry on Unmasked each and every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on blogtalkradio.com. The number 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. Remember, through God's grace and mercy, all things things are possible, for he would not leave you.
Song I wrote, you might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Down, so don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, don't worry, don't do it. Be happy.
Put a smile on your face. Don't bring everybody down like this.
Don't worry.
It will soon pass, whatever it is.
Don't worry, be happy.
I'm not worried.
Well, I really like this song. Bobby McFerrin, Don't Worry, Be Happy. You know, I want to, again, thank all my listeners from north to south, east to west for tuning in, and my special friend, Trip Elix. And thank you, darling, for introducing me to my wonderful guest tonight. I appreciate you. And you know, darling, you can always come back because I know you always got your fingers into something and do another interview. But anyway, my listeners from north to south, east to west, and all the listeners in the 28 countries, thank you for tuning in. And before I let our special guest read something out of her book entitled Plantains and the Seven Plagues, I'm going to let my co-host Chris ask this question.
All right. Well, Pat, how long does it take to complete a writing session when you do one of your books, how long does it take you to complete it?
When I'm doing what? I'm sorry?
When you're writing your books, how long does it take you to complete the book, to write it?
Oh, well, it really depends on the book. This book in particular, the memoir, I did it in less than a month. But like I said, I was motivated and I had my heart needed to, I had to put a lot of thought and feelings into it. So it was fast. The process afterwards, of course, is longer, publishing it, editing it, you know, doing all that. But generally, I have another book that would be coming out in November. It's a sequel to Just Finn, a book that I wrote about, inspired by my brother who has Asperger syndrome. And that one's taken me probably about a year. So, but that one is almost completed. I probably still have another few months of that. And then I'm hoping November, the end of November, it'll be ready. So it just depends on the book. I mean, some people take years to write a memoir. But my case was a little different.
Yeah,
my book is not that long.
Mhm. Yeah, you really can't say how long it takes. It depends on whether, you know, it is motivating you. It's something you got to get out. Or something you just selectively decide, I'm going to write about this, but the process is long. You first got to get your thoughts out, you know, and then the editing.
The
editing and the publishing,
yeah.
And reading. Oh my God!
Yeah,
that's the
process
part.
That takes. That's the expensive part.
Yes,
so,
it is.
Especially
yes.
If you're self-published.
Yeah,
11
books.
Yeah,
I know how expensive it is. Trust and believe. But
yeah,
on that,
absolutely.
You know, I hope you can share with us something that is going to either jog our heartstrings or our memory, something that's going to motivate us to say, yes, I want to get that book.
Well,
so everybody, listen up. Here come past.
I'm actually going backwards. I'm doing something that I do myself, which is when I pick up a book, I always read the last chapter, not the last chapter, but the last paragraph first.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why. I've done that since I was a child. But I'm going to read the first paragraph from the last chapter, which is called A Legacy. Okay? I am shackled to the past. I am consumed by Lot. The divine spirit that collected my mother's soul took a piece of me that is gone forever. I am lost in a sea of the living, a sea of people walking around without knowing real love. There are so many disconnected souls taking life for granted and wasted opportunities for people to love and immortalize their legacies. But having lost so much, my eyes are open to the gifts I have been blessed with. The connections that live between my sisters and brother breathe life back into my parents. The unwavering support and love for my husband make me invincible. There is nothing I cannot do, and he has taught me that the reasons for which I am sad and cry are the very things that make me so fortunate to have so much to feel for, so much to grieve for, because I have had so much. At the end of days, I will have been left a legacy of love, a legacy of family, and something more tangible than material things or a monetary inheritance. I will have had the memories of my mother and father, the values and connections that I am passing on to my children. I reach out into the void that my mother left, and I can feel her in the wind. I can hear her in the voice of my little sister. I can see my father in my youngest boy's smile and in the music from my older son's guitar. The music flows in his veins and into the currents flowing between past and present. And
that's
the chapter. That's
beautiful. I'm so glad that you said that you're leaving a legacy to your children, because a lot of people go through life and they just live it and they don't think about, you know, once they're gone, what did they leave as a legacy to their family? You don't have to have children. It could be a legacy to your siblings, to your parents, you know, to your family, because people need to know more in depth about you. And a lot of times things they do know, they forget. So it's always good if you can to write it down, whether you publish it or whether you just have it as a memoir or in your journal. It's good for everyone to be a picture. We all got our separate perspectives of life.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's important to for us to be aware, and especially as Chris, you know, asked before about COVID, the people that have been affected by, you know, losing family members and everything, life is really short and it's unpredictable and we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, let alone, you know, in 5-10 years. So we love who we love. We need to look around and realize how blessed we are. I think we have things better than we think we do. And I try to look at life that way, and I learned that from my parents. And I'm so glad that they raised us the way they did and that I had them, even though they're gone now. They still live on.
Yeah,
so.
My mother lives on as well. I understand the loss. So anybody out there who have your parents, whether one or both, you know, you are so fortunate. And if you haven't fixed the rift that may exist through y'all, please fix it, because at the end of the day, none of that is important once they're gone. And you can't see what's on your heart. So, Chris, your last question for our guest, darling, because we got to wrap this thing up.
Pat, I just want to say that I didn't know much about you before interviewing you and finding you on social media, but this book that you have out in November, will I be able to find this in Barnes and Noble and stuff?
Oh yes, it'll be everywhere. It'll be like on Amazon, and it'll be Barnes and Noble, Kobo, Apple, you know, everywhere. I mean, you'll probably have to order it. I think right now, as far as the bookstores aren't really carrying much. It depends, unless I can get it into a local shop, you know, where I'm at. But definitely online. The first book, the one that's coming out in November, is coming out November, August 27th, which is called Just Finn, which is the one I said was inspired by my brother. It's a fictional book, very different from this, and it's got some comedy in it. But it's about a young man who deals with Asperger. And then the sequel to that will be out in November. And if you look on my website, I always have updates, and I blog on there, and so you could, you know, find out. And it's pazellis.com is my website.
Good. Is any media sites you want your readers to find you at?
Well, my website is great because there's links there to Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and LinkedIn and everything, but my website is www.pazellis.com. That's PAZELLIS.com.
And my last question for you is, since you was born biracial, half Dominican and half Cuban, did you find any issues with racism directed at you because you was biracial?
You mean currently or like in the past?
Growing up, whatever, because I can remember when I was young, how when they had these stores called Woolworths, and they had the food counters, and me and my mom would go there. They didn't want to serve us because we were black. And as I got older, as a truck driver, I remember I was in some little small town, and I was early to drop my load, and I heard these motorcycles coming. And the first one got to the truck. He said, "You better get out here, nigga." And I cranked that truck up. I got out there quick. And I thank God, because it let me know that the rest of the people that was coming with him was going to do something to me. And for whatever reason, this person had a heart to tell me get out of there. Maybe because he saw that I was young, you know. And
right.
So, but, you know, so I have dealt with it growing up. I dealt with it not too long ago, and it's sad that 2020, that I still got to live this kind of life, you know, just on edge, you know, just never knowing, you know, and people who haven't been a victim of that, they really can't relate. They can have sympathy or empathy for that situation, but they just don't know unless they walked in my shoes or shoes of people who have been victims of racial and hate crimes.
Sure. Well, I mean, I definitely, when I was younger, encountered it, especially when I first started school, because at first there were not a lot of Hispanic children or, you know, kids with darker skin or whatever when I was in school. But through the years, I encountered it with my mother, especially because people would say something thinking I couldn't speak English. And so they would, like, say something about my mom. Or, like, if they saw my parents together, they would say something derogatory about her because she was darker and he was white. And I would turn around and I would say, excuse me? You know, like, I would just, like, jump in to defend them. And, yeah, I mean, you know, you hear people say stuff under their breath. But you know what? I don't care. I don't see color. I was raised to believe that we're all the same and we're all equal. And I believe that. 100%, and there are some things that I refuse to. For instance, this whole thing about reparations for slavery, I am 100% completely against that. I think that's ridiculous, and one of the reasons I think so is because I wouldn't be here if it hadn't been for slavery. In the mid-1600s, my ancestors were sold by people of their own tribe to whoever, and they were brought to the Dominican Republic and Haiti. So those people aren't alive anymore to stand trial or to pay anybody anything. I think the way that we fight back, the way that we move forward is by moving forward and being who you are, what you're doing, you know, by writing, by doing your show, by if you're a doctor, if you're a lawyer, if you're a preacher, if you're a teacher, if you're a good person and you don't see color, even though it affects you. And that is why I feel that way. I will
more history in the school system about black history that you very seldom hear about, you know, and, we got to take one mind and one heart at a time, and I definitely agree with you. And one thing me and Chris do, once you've been on our show, this is home for you. And if you want to come back, you got something new you want to talk about, you're more than welcome. Just hit him up or hit me up, and we'll make sure that it happens.
Yeah.
Chris don't have to come to the show, because next week it's going to be a pre-recorded show of my book, Why Did I Stay So Long, about people who are physically, emotional, and sexually abused, an interview that was done by Gail Delicious Johnson. So, but we've got some things coming up in the following week. On the 24th, we're going to have a lady who was a victim of human trafficking. Oh, my God. You know, that's some.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the following week, yeah, it's going to be another good story about this lady and things that happened in the Bible, you know. So y'all stay tuned with us, you know, tell your friends, follow us on Unmasked, and Paz,
absolutely
being here, darling, on this weekend. Thank you so very much. Is there anything you would like to say, Chris?
I just wanted to thank you for coming on the show. And I just wanted to be clear that, you know, my questions, you know, were not meant to offend you. I was just asking. So if I offended you, I apologize.
No, I have no idea why anything would offend me. I was not offended by anything at all.
All right. Well,
I'm an open book.
Okay.
So no,
sure.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it. And I thank you both. And I'll keep in touch, Terry and Chris. And maybe when I have my my other book out. Oh, and by the way, Plantains in the Seven Plays, in case you have any Spanish readers, will be coming out in Spanish here in a couple of weeks. So I'm very excited about that. Yes.
Yes, that's great. And Paz, please keep in touch, darling, because we want to make sure that you come on back home. You know, you go out into the world, but you got to come back home.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much. I love being on the show, and I can't wait. And I'll post it, and I'll let all my friends hear it.
Okay, darling.
All right.
Awesome. Be blessed.
Thank you. You too. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
You too, darling.
You too.